Think about your favorite river or lake or creek. Freshwater places are so important to us as humans, but they're also important to the ecosystems within and around the water. So how do we balance the needs of us and them? I'm Tegan Taylor, and this is Occam's Razor, a soapbox for science. Today, Callum Donoghue is looking to the future of freshwater systems in Australia and how we can conserve them.
Just to start with, I want you all to very quickly think about the first couple of things that you normally do in the morning when you get out of bed. You might go to the bathroom and have a shower or clean your teeth, or go straight to the kitchen and make yourself a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Along the way, you probably turn on a couple of light switches or make yourself breakfast before you leave the home. Now, what do each of these activities have in common? Well, they all require a reliable and constant supply of fresh water. Water is delivered to your house so it flows when you turn on the tap on an appliance like a dishwasher or a coffee machine. And something that we don't think about as often is that the entire industry chain that's responsible for generating the electricity that is provided to your house require quite a lot of fresh water to operate properly. And finally, the agricultural industry that's responsible for providing us all with food throughout the day, just like breakfast, needs some seriously large volumes of fresh water in order to do things like irrigate their crops. Now think about all the people in your street or in your suburb or in the country that are doing the exact same thing every single morning. That is a lot of water, and in fact, humans consume about 10 billion tons of fresh water every day. The value of fresh water to people goes well beyond our direct consumption, as fresh water has a very strong social and cultural value to many of us. These areas all around the world are hotspots for sports and recreation, like swimming, camping, and fishing. And throughout history, freshwater lakes and rivers have provided a major role in ceremonies and traditions for a diversity of cultures. The problem is that to satisfy our water requirements, we often have to modify these ecosystems or impact them in some way. A really good example is that because freshwater rivers flow into the ocean, we construct these structures such as dams that are designed to capture and store as much fresh water as possible. And despite the good intentions of these kind of structures for us and our communities, they can have quite drastic consequences for the ecosystems. Another example that does not directly relate to our water consumption per se, but is very important to highlight, is that our mistreatment of global atmospheric gases is causing changes to average climate conditions, and that's resulting in less water availability in many regions around the world. The problem with all this is that we're not the only organisms that rely entirely on a lot of fresh water. In fact, freshwater ecosystems support the greatest abundance of biodiversity per unit area compared to any other ecosystem on Earth. And even though they cover less than 1% of the Earth's surface, these habitats contain about 10% of all our described animal species. That includes over 30% of the vertebrates, so things like fishes or amphibians like frogs and salamanders. Hopefully, what I've made clear so far is that there is a strong conflict between human water requirements and the health of freshwater ecosystems. And the reality is that human water security is often prioritised over the environment. It's only the fresh water that remains after our needs have been satisfied that is there to support the ecosystem. So in this context, it is really unsurprising that freshwater ecosystems are also greatly at risk from human activities, with freshwater organisms vastly overrepresented in global and national listings of endangered species. In fact, the current scale of global biodiversity loss in fresh waters is now so rapid that it has been called an invisible tragedy hidden beneath the water's surface. So the challenge for us is, how do we maintain water security for a growing human population, but do this sustainably and factor in the complex interaction that's presented to us through climate change? This is the overarching question that drives my research. And to explain this in a little bit more detail, I'm briefly going to talk about the hydrological cycles of rivers. So many of Earth's rivers do not actually flow all the time throughout the year. but instead go through these periods of high flow and low flow, so lots of water moving through them at some times during the year and not the others. This might actually be pretty familiar to a lot of you, particularly if you've done a lot of driving or travelling around Australia. At some times during the year, you might drive over a bridge and you see a lot of water underneath that's flowing quite rapidly. And then at other times during the year, you can drive over that same bridge and see little to no visible water. This is because during the wet season, when there is a lot of rainfall, rivers flow consistently and they're large and they're very well connected. But during the dry season, when rainfall declines, the flow of rivers also decline or stop entirely, and they then become these small, disconnected pools that are scattered through the catchment or the landscape. But what is really critical for everyone to understand is that these pools of water that are able to persist through the dry season must function as a refuge for the entire freshwater community until the wet season returns. So these little pools kind of act like lifelines for freshwater organisms when all the rainfall declines. But climate change, in interaction with human water requirements, is expected to cause these essential refuge pools to become fewer in number and a lot smaller in volume. This means that the temperature in these pools will increase quite significantly. And because this is essentially squeezing a similar number of organisms into a smaller space, it will drastically increase the competition between freshwater animals for important resources such as food. Unfortunately, currently we know little about how such drastic changes to these habitat conditions will affect the survival, reproduction, and behaviour on the organisms that rely on them. This makes it pretty difficult to really do anything about it from a conservation point of view. So for my research, I take a fundamental approach to this problem, where I try to understand the daily energy requirements of freshwater animals, particularly freshwater fish. I work out how this energy is being used throughout the day and how this energy utilization might change under climate change scenarios. So in a typical day, animals will access energy from their environment through the food that they're eating, and then this energy is allocated to a variety of really important tasks. So for example, a proportion of energy is used by animals to perform physical activity. So this is things like moving around their environment or foraging for food. A portion of energy is also used to grow or create mass, and this includes tissue such as muscle, but it also includes reproductive tissue, such as sperm and eggs. And finally, this is a really important one, energy is also used to maintain all our cells. So our bodies are full of cells that all do a variety of different tasks, and these cells require a constant supply of energy in order to function appropriately. But the important detail from a conservation point of view is the rate at which all these energy utilization processes occur depend on the environmental conditions. A really obvious one is the food availability. So if an animal isn't eating enough food every day, then it will simply run out of energy and it won't be able to grow, it won't be able to reproduce, and it will struggle to move around and build shelters and all the other animal-y stuff. But these processes also depend a lot on temperature. And so if the temperatures in their environment increase too much, then a lot more food is required to support all these different metabolic processes that they need to perform. It's for these reasons that these types of energy utilization models are an ideal method to understand the impacts of climate change and other human activities are having on the behavior and reproduction of a range of threatened species. And an area that I'm really passionate about applying these types of energy models to is the southwest of Western Australia. The southwest is a biodiversity hotspot and is really well known for its exceptionally high rates of endemism. This means that we have a variety of plants and animals that occur here and nowhere else on Earth. So for instance, this region has 11 native species of freshwater fish, but 9 of them only occur in the southwest of WA and are found nowhere else in the planet. But since the 1970s, there's been about a 16% reduction in rainfall, and climate projections are showing that this is expected to get a lot worse. So this is sort of raising serious concerns about the persistence of our unique biodiversity that we have in Western Australia. So freshwater ecosystems globally, nationally, and right here in WA are at the forefront of our current biodiversity crisis. And without research like what I presented here today, we are destined to lose a lot of our biodiversity in the coming decades. Moving forward requires strong collaborations between researchers and managers and policymakers and everyone involved, but it also requires all of us as individuals to think a little bit more about how we're using water in our everyday lives and appreciate the consequence for the little fish that's trying to survive in an ever-shrinking pool of water. Thank you.
You just heard from Murdoch University postdoctoral researcher Callum Donoghue. Callum was speaking at our Occam's Razor live event at the WA Museum Boolabardip on the lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. I'm Tegan Taylor, your Occam's Razor host, and I'll be back next week to introduce you to more scientists with a story to share.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.